So cryptic species is really nothing new for us in biological control, particularly biological control of weeds. And of course, for any project, we're looking for agents that are specific. And John Gaskin's given us some good examples of how much plant variation you can find within our target populations. And of course, you expect to see the same kind of thing in our natural enemies that we're looking for as prospective biological control agents. And historically, we've depended primarily on behavior and morphology to identify those species or populations. And of course, now we have molecular genetics, which gives us a lot of new potential. And you've just seen a very good example of that. I'm going to divide this talk into two themes. One is trying to find the right population or the right natural enemy for the right target weed, which is a historical problem, nothing really new. And the other is looking more for the future of how we can mine this situation. You heard a good example of Asteria chondrilli, the rush skeleton weed. This is an old project, a very brief rehab. This was a pest from Eurasia. Two biological control agents were historically used, both a mite and a rust, but in both cases, there were genotypes of the plant found that were resistant to those different agents, the rust and the mite. I think you have another well-known example of Salvinia. In Florida, Cerdobagus salvinii was found attacking populations of Salvinia minimum. It seemed to be a good agent, even though it didn't go through host testing. But of course, around the world, there's more than one species, and molesta is a major pest in many other tropical countries. And historically, there was confusion between the populations of the weevil. And once it was resolved which species was actually effective at attacking molesta, then there was very effective control in many countries around the world. When molesta showed up in Texas, the idea was simply to take the beetle from Florida and release it in Texas. But the results were very sporadic, not very good. And genetic analysis showed that indeed the Florida population was quite different than the Brazil population. Furthermore, if you look at genetic distances, the distance between the two recognized species is about 5 times the distance between that Florida population of the weevil and the Brazil population. So in other words, not only do you have some crypsis among the recognized species, but there are sort of subspecies or ecotypes of that. And of course, all of our phylogenetic trees today show us that you don't simply have discrete entities, there's a gradation there in terms of genetic distance. Last issue here is that both of the recognized weevil species, Salvinia and singularis, are sympatric. And in fact, in the field, they can be found on the same plant in the same locations. So historically, tag has been used as a criterion to collect insects from a given location to use for biological control, but in this case, that alone wouldn't be enough to give you a safe population of insects. Some other examples that you've heard today also pertain to Melaleuca. Oxyops vitosa, we've heard about already. When this was first collected for introduction, populations were collected near Brisbane. They wanted more weevils, and so they collected more widely. But weevils from a second site seem to be a little bit larger, so there's some concern whether or not they were genetically the same or not. And in fact, it turned out that those populations could be discriminated. And so because of that, the scientists involved decided that it would be better to do some additional host plant testing to make sure that it's safe before releasing. A gall fly on Melaleuca. The distribution of the plant is the purple, and the gall fly accessions are in these stars. There are about 8 species recognized of this gall fly. And the Turneri species is the one of interest for Melaleuca, but you can see that that's collected on more than one plant species. I should say that these are the insect species in blue, and the plant species are in black. And so within this group, the target weed is highlighted in yellow, so there seems to be one or perhaps 2 well-defined populations on Melaleuca. And up to now, about 3 recognized host plant biotypes, if you will, of this fly have been described. John Goolsbee talked about the mite on the climbing fern, so I'll just quickly go over that again. Again, this plant had different genotypes that John found around Southeast Asia, and each genotype seemed to have a mite, and bioassays were very effective for him to try and isolate a population that he could then introduce to Florida. The Brazilian pepper thrips, you've also just heard about. It's a very variable species in Brazil, and a population from Curitiba was evaluated in quarantine, and then Veronica tested a variety of other species that that Bill just talked about. And the synopsis here is that there is a few populations that had very low survival and other populations that had very high survival. This correlated both with haplotype distances, the red corresponding to the red here, and morphological differences, which is probably leading to possible species description. And tamarisk for Dirabia elongata is a weevil that was introduced for salt cedar. Again, as you realize, there are several species of salt cedar in North America. So host specificity is an issue, and another issue that has been mentioned so far is adaptation to latitude. The population from Fujian, China, that was introduced established north of 38 degrees latitude because it has a particular diapause adaptation to that high latitude. If you have it at lower latitudes, it goes into diapause too early and doesn't multiply fast enough to be effective. And so because of that, populations from lower latitude were introduced for lower latitude states. But in fact, more recently, it appears that there are probably about five species that can be recognized from this group. So that the population that was originally introduced from China could now be called Carinulata instead of Elongata. So those are all pretty much historical cases. What does this pertain for the future? Well, historically, we look for things that we think are specific to the agent. And often we use taxonomic or field observations to do that. And that was the case for a weevil that I've been working on. There's a population that had very few host plant records. And so we use that as a potential biological control agent. And that has worked out quite well in host plant testing. But some of the cooperators I work with have also found in Europe, during their explorations, unusual observations. For example, here's a weevil, Pseudorhynchus assimilis, which Ruholus Sobien found repeatedly on whitetop in Europe. And this is known to be a pest of 13 species of Brassicaceae, including cabbage. So typically, this would not be your first pick as an agent. However, when Ruhola surveys, he's also looking at other plants to see whether or not they're attacked. And when he found high infestations of this weevil, he didn't find it attacking nearby cabbage fields. So it made him think perhaps there's some biotype or subspecies here that could be specific to Lepidium. In fact, that's what turned out to be the case, that in host specificity tests, this population did appear to be specific. Another example is Sloides calcamira, flea beetle. This was introduced into North America for control of musk thistle. It probably is not established, but when scientists were exploring in Europe for yellow star thistle, they were finding this species on yellow star thistle and scotch thistle in southern Russia, which was quite surprising because they knew that it was associated with carduus. Genetic studies have shown pretty much description of three different genetic populations of adults that were collected in the field on different plants. Some of these were in Russia, and then some of these were also in Italy. So what does that have to do with their specificity? Well, if you do simple three-way choice experiments, putting adults in an arena where they can choose between three different species of plants, you can look at their feeding rates, and the population that was collected from Carduus nutans, for example, in Italy, preferred Carduus nutans. And if you repeat this again for the other populations, here's the one I just showed you from Italy. But for populations that were collected on Onoportum, preferred Onoportum. And so here's a population from two locations in Italy and another one from Russia, all of them preferring Onoportum when the adults were collected on Onoportum. and another population from Russia that was collected on yellow star thistle, very close by to this location, preferred yellow star thistle. Sampling wider in Europe, we find that the population associated with yellow star thistle seems to be very homogeneous. There seems to be very little genetic diversity for this marker, the CO1. The onopportum one is less well defined, but there appear to be perhaps two or more groups. And then the Cargis one seems to be the most diverse of all. And so all of these potentially could be biological control agents. And it's interesting because these plants are all in different subtribes of the family, so they're not that closely related. Switching back to Ceratopium bassicorni, the weevil for yellow star thistle, this has a wide distribution from Spain across to eastern Turkey. And if you sample across that range, you find that for the same marker, the genetic diversity is actually very limited. They all have the same exact sequence except for one which differed by one base pair. And this homogeneity is interesting because it raises the question, well, could we use insects from different locations and expect them to have the same host plant specificity? It's quite different than the case for Psilloides. Trichocera callis is another interesting historical case because this was introduced a while ago in North America for Cargis nutans. But in North America, it also attacks two Cercium species. So it's not quite as specific as something we would generally like to introduce today. It's been introduced to Canada, New Zealand, Australia, primarily for Cargis. And then subsequently, David Breeze found a population in Spain that is specific to onopportum, and he introduced that into Australia for onopportum. And at that time, a morphological taxonomist got involved, Alessandro Zarazaga. And he described them as three different species, and in the paper says that T. horridus is only adapted to Cerciums, Mortadello is on Cargis, and Breezii is on onopportum. So that sounds nice and simple, but then Ronnie Grumpman discovered that specimens in New Zealand were on both Cercium and Cargis, even though they had initially been introduced for Cargis. So she expected to find both Mortadello and horridus, but in fact she only found what looked like horridus. So the question is, do these three species actually exist? And so far we're not really sure. And until now, no DNA analysis has been done on these. So this is one thing we're working on right now, is to figure out if these three species actually exist and how they associate with the host plants. Another project that we've just begun is one on Cosmobaris scolopaceae, which is a weevil that is known as a pest of beets in Eurasia. But foreign explorers have seen it a lot on Salicola species in Europe. But in North America, it's also reported from Chenopodium album. And these three plants are all in different tribes. So again, it seems like it's extremely prolific species, or perhaps it's a species in which there are cryptic biotypes that are specific to those plants. And fortunately, there's a taxonomist, Jens Prenna, who's interested in revising this group. And so we're working with him to collect material and look at DNA analysis and host specificity. Same situation with Lixus incandescens. It's a group that is has a lot of controversy and needs taxonomic revision. And so we're working with a Turkish taxonomist, Levent Gultekin, on that group as well. And you can see it has the same similar wide distribution of reported host plants. So are these guys true species, and does it matter? Well, for regulatory issues, it matters quite a bit because you need a name to put on a petition to release. And it becomes, in essence, a legal document. You could say that it's a bureaucratic problem, but it is certainly a problem. Perhaps more relevant for us as scientists is the need to classify our insects using both morphological and DNA data. And Daniel Rowley, I don't know if you saw his poster yesterday, but he's recently published a paper indicating that in the future, specimens should be referenced not only with barcodes, but also in a morphological database as well. So it's basically a GenBank and a MorphBank systems that are web-based. The current policy for TAG is that it's okay if you release additional individuals from the same location. And it seems that in some of these examples, that's probably not a very safe thing to do. And the next question is, how far can we use genetic analysis to help us with our use of behavioral tests to assay specificity? In other words, if we identify one population of arthropod that is specific and it has a certain barcode, for example, do other insects with that barcode have the equal level of specificity? And this is an area of research that I think is going to be very important for the future. For some challenges for the future, since we're in a situation where we don't necessarily know that each individual is the right one to release, we need to have some assays to do that. It can either be a bioassay or a molecular assay. If you do a molecular test, then you're killing the insect. So having a non-lethal test would be very useful. And Boris Fumanol has published a paper on extracting frass from the weevil on Lepidium that I talked about previously. And we've tried to repeat that, but it's been a very low success rate. So this is on a wish list of something we'd like to see for the future. The other question is, we're basically talking about the evolutionary leading edge, so to speak, of host specificity adaptation. But what is it that's regulating that? And how fast or how far can insects jump to new host plants? These are things that would be really nice to know for the future for releasing something that has many different populations that adapt to many different plants, for example, the Asteria mites. How stable are those for the future? Last one is, what actually controls host plant specificity? If we knew something about more about the physiology of that process, then it opens into the future of genetic engineering for these agents to control them and make them designer insects, in effect, for the particular targets that we're trying to control. So I'll stop there and open up for questions or discussion. How are we for time?
Yeah, we have 4 minutes.
Okay, great. Yeah. Nice.
One of the things that comes up when you're midway through a biological control program on weeds and you find that you are dealing with cryptic species of some kind is how much of the broad host specificity testing for safety reasons do you have to retrace to do? We had one example in Australia where we got sort of quick sign-off from regulatory authorities who were prepared to accept the great differences are unlikely. They just want to see a retesting of some of the really closely related species that would be of interest. What do you think about that? Does anybody have any idea how you try to handle that in the U.S.?
That'd be good. Ray, do you want to respond to that at all for salt cedar in the case there where you had two different populations that you introduced? And
actually, we had multiple introductions. I think altogether different people introduced maybe five or so different biotypes or types that turned out to be different species. And we and Albany focused on two of those, and we took the conservative route of doing almost not totally complete testing, but certainly the most critical plants in the range of possibilities that would potentially cause problems. So we were conservative at our steps, but other people moved much more quickly, and we were actually a little bit surprised at how liberal the regulatory agency was in regard to allowing this to happen. So my personal feeling is we have to be very careful about this and be conservative in the approach that we take when making these decisions.
Yeah.
Lincoln, could you not just, in terms of looking at for a non-lethal DNA test, de-leg at least big insects like weevils? Certainly they would survive if you clipped off a leg, and I think you can do DNA from legs. I know it's been done in some kinds of insects.
Yeah. Well, if you can do DNA from aerophyid mites, you can certainly do it from legs.
So that
that's
would
true.
Be a way to do it. It's just...
That's true. It's, but we'd like to release agents that are as fit as possible.
But in terms of forming a breeding colony in the lab, you could,
yes.
You could certify the pedigree of every individual that went into a breeding colony, and then your offspring with all six.
Certainly. The suggestion to cut off a leg is, and sacrificing the mother is of course what we do now in the process. Yeah, any other questions or comments?